Chapter 12. Extremes beget extremes. These three words express a truth that is written plainly in the pages of human history. Yet it is a truth that men are very unwilling to learn. Tyranny and abuse of power, with extremes of provocation, have been followed by revolution and counter-revolution, the violence of the reaction always being proportionate to the violence of the exciting cause. Opposing parties have hated, feared, and persecuted each other, as the fortunes of war have given them power and opportunity. Men have passed from one extreme to another, heaping up against themselves disruptive forces that have overthrown them, so that they have been brought to experience the same kind of misery that they have inflicted on others. When moderation has prevailed, it has often been through sheer exhaustion rather than through wise counsels. When wise men have deliberately chosen the moderate course, they have often been condemned by their friends as weak and yielding. We can look back on history and recognize that such men were strong as well as being wise, and that the extremists were weak as well as foolish. But for every 1,000 men who can recognize this lesson in the history of the past, there is hardly one who is wise enough to apply it in the experiences of the present. In large political issues, some of the nations, in measure, have learned the lesson. Extremes always beget extremes, and moderation does not imply weakness. In the very small matters of life, too, wherever there is an attempt at politeness, the lesson has been learned very well. There is, however, still a vast field where the old errors are repeated with pathetic monotony, men working each other up to extremes of feeling and conduct that blast and destroy much of the work that might be perfected with moderation. Perhaps the little adventures of everyday life may furnish a more helpful lesson than the great events of history. It is easier to trace cause and effect in the simple experiences of ordinary individuals than in the complex intercourse of multitudes. It may be, too, that an attitude which would seem normal and rational in connection with a great event is exposed as merely absurd in the world of commonplace trivialities. If two moderately sensible men, hastening in opposite directions, chance to collide, with the result that one drops his hat in the mud and the other sustains bruises, we do not expect them to magnify their injuries or to blame each other for the mishap. A sensible, fairly educated man will make light of his own trouble and express his regret without for a moment insisting that the other was to blame, whatever his thoughts may be. It would be so perfectly absurd for two respectable citizens to have a heated argument as to who was to blame, and perhaps come to blows, because they had both been too much in a hurry. If they were guilty of such folly, they would both miss their appointments. They would probably both be more damaged by the dispute than by the original mishap, and no possible good would be effected. Worst of all, observers would only laugh at them. Exactly similar foolishness on the part of nations may lead to war with its unrelieved tragedy. Nations cannot be laughed out of going to war. They may be horrified out of it until the memory of the reality becomes dim. Then they need another lesson to keep them from such petulant folly. For the moment, however, we desire to contemplate the many human collisions that are neither great enough to horrify nor small enough to be obviously ridiculous. How often men and women will exaggerate their injuries, throw all the blame on the other party, impute the worst of motives, and become continually more extreme in their cultivated injustice. In the same town, often in the same religious community, sometimes in the same family, there are disputes which grow according to the law of extremes until there is permanent estrangement. Such disputes are too tragic to appear ridiculous, yet in many instances they are quite as foolish as a quarrel between two hasty men who bump into each other at the awkward corner. So often the original cause of difference is a little matter compared with the evils which develop in the course of the dispute. Many years ago it was remarked by the man to whom God gave especial wisdom that a soft answer turneth away wrath, and that yielding pacifieth great offenses. All observers of human nature agree that this is true, but most people want someone else to use the soft answer. They look to the other party in the dispute to do all the yielding. It seems quite natural for human beings to make exaggerated statements, especially in discussions. Perhaps exaggeration makes for a certain vigor and vitality of expression which arrests attention, and in that manner sometimes serves a useful purpose. It may be effective in swaying the feelings and convictions of foolish and thoughtless people, and so gaining support that would be withheld from a more temperate advocate. For worldly objects, therefore, exaggeration of statement may be effective just as with other evil things. Christians, however, should shun it. They should be temperate and moderate and sober. They should let their yea be yea and their nay, nay, remembering that whatsoever is more than this cometh of evil. There comes a time when the moderate statement carries far more weight than all the exaggerated protestations of extremists. It may not so much please the partisan who desires to hear a new emphasis of his own convictions, but it is far more effective in presenting truth to worthy minds. If a man is convicted of telling a lie, the truths he has uttered will also be accounted as lies. Exaggeration of statement is only a milder form of lying, and it has a similar effect. There is another phase of this subject that is, perhaps, more important than any matter of expression can possibly be. Extremes may grow in the mind until they lead to a most serious lack of balance, almost akin to insanity. Although they form a species of mental cancer, they obey the law of growth. That is, they grow by nourishment and use. They can usually obtain a plentiful supply of nourishment from the thoughts of the extremist. They find the most effective use in resisting the opposite extreme. Sometimes a reasonable and sober man will admit that he has gone to an extreme, but will excuse his conduct on the ground that it was a deliberate attempt to counteract the opposite extreme of other people. We have known a man of usually excellent judgment and balance to make this plea. We think that if his action was indeed deliberate, his judgment was for the moment greatly at fault. If he only meant that in reviewing the past, he was conscious of his extreme and the cause of it, we can commend him for being able to recognize his own error, always a difficult task. It is the most natural matter in the world for us to set up a counter-extreme against the outrageous conduct or opinions of our neighbors. It is, however, a great mistake to do this deliberately with the object of reforming them. No Christian desires to crush the personality of those with whom he comes in contact, and short of such crushing effect, all resistance that fails to appeal to reason only gives the wrong thought more exercise, thus making it grow. You might cure a pugnacious boy of fighting by matching him against a super bully who would cripple him, but you will never cure him by bringing against him a succession of minor bullies against whom he can put up a good fight. The fact that they are obviously bullies seems to excuse his own too ready pugnacity. They are so clearly in the wrong that he does not trouble to ask himself the question as to whether he is in the right. He has a reassuring sense of acting justly, while he finds strengthening exercise for his evil tendency. as we neither want to cripple him nor to increase his pugnacity, the right course, surely, is to find for him a manly but moderate and sober companion who will show him a better way without giving opportunity for the exercise of the tendency that we deplore. Possibly some readers will complain that this illustration is hardly fair. We agree that, like most illustrations, it is imperfect, but it conveys a truth calling for serious reflection. The extreme views that we might like to correct in our neighbors may have nothing to do with fighting, but the moment they are antagonized, the fighting spirit is aroused, and if that spirit is encouraged, it is not only harmful in itself, but it will probably take the extreme views with it to still greater extremes. It is often difficult to avoid arousing the merely combative spirit, however moderately we state our objections to the extreme view. A temperate statement will often appeal to reason, however, and thus show a more excellent way, even although some time may elapse before the way is chosen. If, however, we try to counter the error by an opposite extreme, we are simply diverting attention from the real subject and advertising something which seems to justify the evil that we deplore. At the same time, we are arousing the fighting spirit and presenting it with an apparently just cause. A sweep would be the most ineffective critic to point out that the baker had flour on his coat. We must certainly not go to extremes with the deliberate hope of countering the extremes of others. We should, on the other hand, be constantly at our guard against the natural tendency in this direction. Most men have this tendency strongly developed, although, perhaps, only few have sufficient mental alertness to be fully aware of it. With a little effort, men may be able to see it clearly enough in the smaller matters of life. They can test their reactions on this low plane and prove the power of moderation. To take a very simple illustration, an Englishman and an American, each with a well-developed appreciation of his own country, meet and begin to exchange friendly ideas. One makes rather an extreme claim for the merits of his native land. Immediately, the other feels a desire to counter it with an opposite extreme. If both are foolish enough to yield to the temptation, they may soon quarrel. If they are extremely foolish, they may end by coming to blows or parting in a condition of ridiculous anger. A man, however, must have a very poor mental equipment or a very ill-balanced mind if he is prepared to quarrel over such a matter. A sense of humor would save him. The story has been told of an American tourist who made some extreme statements in a London omnibus. He affirmed that some of the buildings they passed on the route could be erected in America in a few days. Finally, when they reached St. Paul's Cathedral and he inquired what building it was, the conductor replied, "I don't know. They hadn't started building it when we passed this morning." If the tourist possessed a sense of humor, he would accept this preposterous statement as an amusing reproof of his own extremes and simply pass it with a laugh. On such a plane, the worst of extremes may be thus lightly treated, and perhaps they do little harm. Unfortunately, the same tendency and the same reactions are continually manifest in connection with more important matters. The subject may be too serious to admit of laughter, and the disputants may be quite unaware of their own exaggerations. They develop their excesses gradually as a drunkard goes from stage to stage without being conscious of his increasing folly. The greatest danger is inevitably in connection with the most serious issues of life. The Apostle Paul mentions strife and debate as among the evil things of the flesh, and surely every true Christian can understand the reason for this classification. When men speak to each other and discuss serious subjects as friendly mortals all needing help, they help each other and increase their knowledge. But when the demon of opposition and debate is aroused, there is often a marked deterioration on both sides. Under this influence, a man will sometimes make a violent attack on any proposition that comes from a suspected quarter, even though it simply expresses thoughts that he would have warmly approved before the strife began. If he allows the worst form of pride to enter his heart, he may easily end by denouncing everyone who dares to differ from him in the slightest degree. If he is too sensible to reach this extreme, the fever works itself out, and he climbs back to sanity. He may not be prepared to admit the harm he has wrought even then. There are usually so many other extremists in sight that he can throw the blame on them. It is one of the constantly recurring tragedies of life. It is a startling and rather disgusting fact that men learn the elementary lessons of life most readily when money is involved. This law of extremes is recognized in the business world, and the natural tendency is suppressed every day at the command of mammon. A salesman offers an increasingly popular line of goods to a merchant. The merchant sells goods of different and perhaps rather superior quality and does not desire to encourage the new line. Perhaps rather annoyed at their increasing popularity, the merchant declares that he would not stock such rubbish. The salesman will inevitably feel an inclination to run to the other extreme and maintain that his goods are of far better quality than the more expensive line favored by the merchant. If he yields to this temptation, he may be soon ordered out of the place, and there will be no business done. If he is an experienced salesman, he will know how to yield while remaining faithful to his trust, and he will very probably win by yielding. He will admit the high quality of the merchant's goods, but point out that his own are different, that they have their peculiar merit, that they are rather cheaper, and that such a demand is springing up for them, that a place might well be found for them without interference with the existing trade. Times without number, such methods of moderation have won in the business world. After all, it is simply a temperate and forceful presentation of truth instead of meeting a half-lie with another half-lie. Such methods are needed in every phase of life. On the highest plane, they are needed most of all. Well might the apostles tell us to be sober and temperate, and to let our moderation be known to all men. If these lessons could be applied in the most important issues of Christian conduct, many tragedies could be averted, and work more faithfully be performed in the ministration of that which is without money and without price.